but that's the old me. Shouting out of my window, broke down. Cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you are listening to the podcast version of this show, which, of course, you can do that anytime, any place, anywhere. Just go to wherever you get your podcast and look for Let's Go Pensacola, and you can listen to us on demand. Either way, no matter when you're listening, no matter how you're listening, no matter who you're listening with, we hope to bring you make your day just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does every week on the show, please welcome my co-host, Jeremy Branch.
Thanks for having me. I don't know if the folks that are listening are aware. We had a little bit of a hiatus, but we're back in full gear. We're kind of talking about the end of the summer as things are kind of coming to an end in summer movie season. So if you haven't listened to last week's show, we talk a little bit about that. We talk about Dungeon Crawler Carl, and we also share our thoughts on some of the new casting news that came out in the world of X-Men, which is going to kind of carry over naturally into the conversation that we're having today. But Julio, I wanted to ask, we've talked about Kit Connor. We talked about Samara Weaving. We talked about, what's her name?
Sadie Sink.
Yeah, Sadie Sink, who's cast to play Jean Grey. That's starting to fill out the X-Men roster. In that kind of line of thought, is there people that the X-Men casting team should be looking at as like, hey, this is the young talent I've been noticing lately. They could make a good addition to the roster.
I'm hard-pressed to think of any that like I haven't already kind of heard in the discussion.
Okay. Like, maybe I haven't heard some of those.
Well, I mean, I'm going to blow her name, Indy Navarette.
Okay, from Obsession, yeah. What do you think?
She has been out there in the media saying she'd really like to play Mystique.
Ooh, that could be definitely interesting. I texted you a couple of weeks ago, Odessa Zion. She was in the Hellraiser reboot. She was in the recent I Love L.A. That was the Rachel Sennett kind of vehicle. I think she has the look. She kind of fits into that age bracket. I know a lot of people are real particular about whether or not she has the Southern accent, but as somebody so eloquently put, they're actors and they're acting, so I'm sure she can pull something out. But that's one that comes to my mind. What about Professor X?
You had her for Rogue, and there's been some.
Yeah, sorry.
There's
yep,
also been some noise about maybe Margaret Qualley as Rogue, which I could see.
I've heard Kaylee Spaney.
Yeah, that's one that's been floating around a lot lately, too, like more so than Margaret Qualley. And she is a little younger, which would make sense if you're kind of going Sadie Sink and Kit Connor age.
Kaylee Spaney can play very young. Yeah. I think she's actually 27, but could probably play 17 and nobody would bat an eye at it.
It just all depends on where you're putting the characters and what you're doing with them. So all of that is a variable. But I think Kaylee Spaney, is fantastic. I absolutely love her. I've heard a lot of buzz about I'm not getting to Professor X just yet because I don't have an answer for that, to be completely honest with you. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
There's been some questions about whether he's even in the first X-Men movie, which is an interesting perspective. But a lot of people have been talking about maybe Cooper Hoffman for Beast, which I could see.
Cooper Hoffman. Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't know where I saw this from, but they were also fan casting the guy from season 2 of Beef. I don't know his name right now as a potential Hank McCoy as well. So that I feel like Cooper Hoffman would probably be my more likely pick.
I believe you're talking about Charles Melton. Melton. Yeah. There was heavy rumors that he was cast, and then like in the last day or two, there's been rumors that he dropped out.
So
that's why I didn't go that route, because that's where the buzz seems to be on that. There's so many question marks about what characters are even going to be in this, and
yeah,
and you know what the tone is and how the age is, but like there's been also a lot of talk about Adam Driver out there. And obviously,
so weird.
Well, obviously he'd be an older character than some of these core characters.
Magneto is what I was hearing.
Well, that was out there a lot, but there's also a lot of noise out there that Magneto's not in this movie, which honestly, kind of good with that. Like we've done Magneto out the wazoo. Like there's other X-Men villains out there. If you're talking about Adam Driver as Mr. Sinister, I'm a little more interested.
Sure.
That could be really, really interesting. As far as like some other people that haven't been thrown out there that I think it would be interesting to see them in this universe, whether it be in X-Men or some other Marvel role. Sydney Chandler is one that I'd be very, very on seeing somewhere. I think she's fantastic. I would pretty much watch her in just about anything.
For those of you that are not aware of who that is, she was in Alien Earth.
Alien Earth. She also played Chrissy Hynde in the miniseries Pistol, which is the first thing I really noticed her in that I highly recommend. It's on Hulu. Check it out. Big fan of Monica Barbaro, who, of course, is in theaters right now in One Night Only, but also was in Top Gun Maverick and Oscar nominated for the Bob Dylan biopic with Timmy Chalamet.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little older. She's like more like Samara Weaving's age. They're very close in age, actually. So maybe, you know, slightly more mature role for her. But I want to see her in something. I want to see her in everything.
I've seen murmurings of the guy from the show Ozark, the brother of, what's her name's character? Anyways, the guy who plays the brother in Ozark. I've heard him as potentially being looked at for Professor X. And that's the only role I've seen him in. But I think he could be a really good fit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
I wish I knew his name.
There's so many question marks here, and I think it's all going to come into clearer perspective. And you know, full disclosure, we're actually recording this ahead of D23, so there may be some more news out there by the time this comes out.
That'll be interesting if there is.
Yeah. So you know, we'll see what happens. You know, all of that kind of spins out of. Of course, what we just saw in Spider-Man Brand New Day, which we're going to talk about in a little more depth and later in the show. We're going to talk a little bit more about The Odyssey more in depth later in the show. Those are obviously the two biggest movies of the year and that we haven't really gotten to dig into on the show yet. So even though it's been a little over a month and a half since The Odyssey came out, and it's been about 3 weeks since Spider-Man came out. But, you know, we want to talk about those a little more in depth, and we just want to kind of talk about the overall of the season. And I think, you know, we kind of did that a little bit too in mentioning Indy Navarrete. Am I saying her name right?
I think so.
Yeah. You know, from Obsession, which is, you know, clearly the breakout character of the year, I think. Certainly the most iconic.
I think there's the two Cinderella stories for the summer, and I think it's a tale of two different kinds of movies, right? We've got the indie horror, and then we've got the kind of tried and true blockbuster formula that for half of the summer people were dismissing as something that was over. So I think there's something interesting there too.
Yeah, people were dismissing it was as over, and then The Odyssey and Spider-Man came out, and everybody was like, yeah, you guys are stupid.
yeah. I think, you had a broader point about that and just that people don't really care to go see mediocre films, but they'll show up for good ones. My question is, if that's the case, how would anybody have known Spider-Man was good previous to opening weekend when it came out? If they weren't like plugged into the online discourse, but I think Spider-Man is just one of those universally beloved characters.
Well, I think it comes down to a matter of marketing and trailers, and you know, you can get an idea of whether something, you know, is mid or it's great. And it might be the wrong idea, but you can get the idea.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that people looked at some of these trailers for, you know, not to throw anything under the bus, but for Masters of the Universe and Supergirl and Moana, and thought, that looks mid. And they may or may not have been right. I don't particularly think they were right in some of those cases versus they looked at the trailers for these and they thought, that looks great. I can't wait to see it. And they just happened to actually be great. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Co-host Jeremy Branch is on the line with us, and we kind of started out talking about like the summer in general, but let's get a little more specific here. And I guess we're going to kind of go backwards, for lack of a better term, because I think the first thing we want to talk about here is Spider-Man Brand New Day, which is probably the newest movie that we're going to talk about. It's kind of like the, I guess you could really say it's really the climax of the summer season, both in terms of box office, because it's already the biggest movie of the year. But I think in terms of excitement and in terms of maybe quality, like there's a lot of really good movies out there this year, but like this is a top five for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and it feels weird to say it, like for all this, like, oh, the MCU sucks now, the movies are so mid, blah, blah. This is not a mid movie. Like, you know, I know there's this attitude. And I mean, I know we've got friends, like our friend Chris Kubiak's like, oh, I'm so uninterested in superhero movies now. Like, I'm not even going to see this. I'm like, dude, like, I get that, you know, that maybe there's been a lot of mid movies out there, but I'm telling you, not only is this one good, but this one would be right up your alley because I know you. And you're like, I'll wait for home video.
Yeah, I do think you'll be missing something by not experiencing, but of course I would say that, but I think you'll be missing something by not experiencing this one and The Odyssey in the theater. I love it when a movie's a sensory experience, and going and seeing movies in the larger format is always going to like make it a more immersive experience. But yeah, I think Spider-Man Brand New Day did the thing that I was worried about in the most perfect way possible. So if you go back to before the movie was released, when you and I were specifically talking about trailers, I was like, this isn't going to be a Spider-Man movie the way that I had hoped it would be. I wish it was more focused on Peter and not so focused on the other stuff. And I will say, it's an X-Men movie that is also an almost perfect Spider-Man movie. Like, they're able to do all of those things, including folding the things that I was worried about, and deliver something that is, I just think, universally likable. I don't think that there could be many people like in the world that would watch Spider-Man Brand New Day and not be like, wow, that was a really good time.
Not anybody that I think is being intellectually and emotionally honest.
Right.
Like there's always going to be people that are going to be contrarian. There's always going to be people that want to look down their nose at something just because it's popular or it's the thing of the moment. But I think if you are being intellectually honest and you're being emotionally honest, that this is a really, really great film. It's one of the best Spider-Man films that has ever been made. And it's one of the best films of the year. Like, I don't know.
I'm not walking back my critiques of Marvel, and I don't think Spider-Man is going to sway me one way or another about the state of the superhero universes and things like that, because I've said it to you, I've probably said it on air, I think Spider-Man and Batman are unchained by the broader societal and social context that comes along with superhero movies, and that no matter how exhausted we get hearing about these expanded universes and secondary characters and all of that, Spider-Man and Batman, they sit in a league of their own.
Yeah, I think that's true. And there's probably a couple other characters you can say that as well.
Who would be another one that you would think of? Maybe Superman, but I don't think Superman has the universal appeal of Spider-Man because of the kind of American-centric coding of Superman, which is why a lot of people like him, but it just means across the world, he may not have the appeal of someone like Spider-Man.
I mean, he's got the brand name. Yeah, there is a certain level that a Superman movie is not going to fall below in that versus like, and I'm not making qualitative judgment here by using this as an example, versus like a Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel is a movie made $1 billion coming out right in the heat of the Endgame, Infinity War, the hype. Mm-hmm. And then the Marvels came out and made like $250 million worldwide.
Yeah.
And, there's not the consistency. There's not what made that first movie a hit was the overall superhero hype and not the demand for that character.
Yes. absolutely. Well put. And I do think that seeing people show up for Brand New Day kind of enforces something that you've said before. And that's just basically that, like, people will show up for good movies. They're like, the idea that people won't show up to Avengers Doomsday because there is a general fatigue, I don't even think that's intellectually honest. I just don't know that outside of these kind of tried and true movies, we're going to see the same kind of turnout. But anyways, all that said, that's a broader conversation I brought to the table, and I apologize about that, because I do want to talk about Spider-Man. I think that having Frank Castle work as his foil was such a really great way to, again, like, highlight the heroism of Peter Parker and what makes him, like, special. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that. My favorite part of this movie is the relationship between Peter Parker and Frank Castle, Spider-Man and the Punisher, the way they play off of each other, the way Tom Holland and John Barenthal play off each other. They bring out the best in each other. And that's
that, banter about Peter saving his life is kind of a recurring bit throughout the movie. And it's played really funny. And yeah, just hearing him argue is great.
Well, and the Punisher is a very dark character. And I don't think that there's anything about the way he's depicted away in this film that necessarily takes away from that darkness. But Spider-Man makes the Punisher a better man, makes the Punisher want to be a better man, makes him see the better angels.
Yeah.
And makes him act upon the better angels in his life rather than the darker impulses in his life. And I know there's
also some, go ahead.
I know there's no way to, like, make that permanent. Like, there's going to be another Punisher thing and he's going to go more on the dark side, or he's going to show up in Daredevil and he's going to be darker, and he should be, because people are people, and people are situational, and there's things that people would do in certain circumstances that they wouldn't do in other circumstances.
And while they did sand off the roughest edges of Frank in Brand New Day, I think it works really well within the context of this movie without without sanding away all of the rough edges. Like, this is still not a likable, affable guy by any means. And so they don't get rid of all of his grittiness or his darker impulses. And in fact, that plays very significantly into the movie. So that's a great relationship. And
then
the end of No Way Home, there was this thing established where Peter had wiped everybody's memories. So I think it's fair to say, going into this film, his support network is no longer with him. And I was curious to see the way that they handled his relationships with Ned, but more specifically MJ. And I think they did it really, really well here.
Well, I mean, you know, they, in part, they handled it by, they went off to college and they spent 4 years not seeing each other.
And we get all of that within just moments of the movie. And it's such a great way to really hit home how much time has passed and how present they are in his lives versus them literally not knowing even who he is, even if there's some small part of them that does. And I think that gives it the kind of essence of the solo Spider-Man movie that I was looking for when I didn't necessarily get that in the trailers. And so I thought it was really great that they were able to fold that in and still make this really personal to Peter Parker. And then the way that that feeds into his antagonist of the movie is also really clever.
Yeah, because not really a spoiler warning here, but spoiler warning, the antagonist of this movie for most of the movie is Jean Grey.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not a villain, but she definitely does some intense things in this film. And she is, you know, you are led to believe that she is a villain for most of the film, as is Spider-Man. And then once you get the reveal and who she is, and Spider-Man, you know, realizes what he's dealing with, it's the most Spider-Man thing ever. He is compassionate and he cares.
Yep.
He cares about people. That's the core of, you know, as much as you want to say with great power becomes great responsibility is the core of Spider-Man. And it is, like, part of that responsibility is caring for the people around you. And he does, he cares about everybody. He cares about everybody in New York and everybody that, like, even the bad guys. And again, Gene's not a bad guy per se, but, like, he cares about them. And even when they do the wrong thing, he's not, like, going out of his way to hurt people or to, you know, make people's lives harder. He may screw up sometimes because he's a human being, but like compassion is the core of who Peter Parker is. And it's because of his upbringing by Aunt May. And that is brilliantly executed in this film with a great cameo inside Peter's mind of Marissa Tomei returning as Aunt May. And that's the lesson that he imparts on to Jean Grey. And that makes Jean Grey who she is, who she becomes.
So while that is all accurate, I think what kind of parallels their journeys is that Peter Parker is further mutating throughout the course of the movie. And that means he's kind of losing control of his ability to keep control. He's kind of succumbing to his rage and these more arachnid genes or something like that. But it's played really well because basically it's saying, like, the further he gets isolated, the less he leans on support, the more likely he is to, fall into what Frank is or fall into what Gene is and what kind of his arc is, realizing that kind of he needs people around him, which feeds perfectly into Gene's arc, as we know where she's headed at the end of this movie. So the lesson that she learned is basically to join this team that Marvel fans have been waiting for years to come into the MCU. And I thought they did a pretty good job of making it feel naturalistic. And I have a thought about this inhibitor that Peter created and the way that it's going to play into the future of the X-Men universe. Is that
okay.
pretty obvious?
Well,
you feel like you know where I'm at?
Yeah, well, hold that thought. We'll talk about it more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me, and we're talking about Spider-Man Brand New Day. Want to just point out, that's another song, as was the last one, TV on the radio, Wolf Like Me, this one, Loser by Tame Impala. I really like the song choices in this movie. It's not like in a James Gunn-y kind of needle drop way. It's more of a vibe way. It really does feel like 20-something New Yorkers. It really adds to that environment. There's a lot of like hipper younger bands. I realize that that TV on the Radio song is like 15 years old at this point, but still like a lot of like indie kind of vibe to it that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I agree. It weirdly doesn't feel try-hardy in the same way. Maybe it's because the needle drops, like you said, they more fit the tone of the movie than something that calls attention to itself.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
They're with you there.
They're not trying to say something about what's happening on screen. It's more of an overall vibe.
Yeah.
Wrong with either way. I love what James Gunn does. I'm not knocking it, but it's just a different philosophy and it works. In general, that's something I want to say real quick, before we go back to your point, that I think Dustin Daniel Cretton is doing an amazing job of. I think he sets a great atmosphere in all of his films, but his visual style too. This does not look like any other Spider-Man movie. It looks like Spider-Man, but it does not look like the other Spider-Man movies. It looks like, you know, a lot of organic, not CGI, like a lot of like in camera wire work and practical effects, and just the camera angles he chooses. It's very interesting from a visual standpoint.
I think that's a good point. And that kind of speaks to what I was discussing last week about Sean Levy and lacking a distinct visual style. I think this guy's got a terrible name. And I think that's why I don't talk about him more. Is it Destin Daniel Craig or
Dustin? Cretton.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a terrible name. It's just really freaking hard to remember.
As long as they spell it right on the checks, baby.
Yeah, that's right. It has become a cliche at this point to say some of the imagery is lifted directly from the comics, but there is a couple of really iconic shots from Spider-Man comics that are used really well in the movie. And it was cool to see him swinging on skyscrapers for the first time in a long time.
Well, like, and
they
even
handled
when
him really well in that way,
even when he does that, yeah, they made a very concerted effort to recreate several famous comic book covers.
Uh-huh.
And like, you can look at the way he does that and compare it to the way that, let's say, Zack Snyder does the same kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And you can see that there's some, you know, some common standpoints there where they have the slow motion and, you know, that kind of thing. But I just think that Cretton executes it in a way that's a lot less, they did the thing than Snyder does.
Yes. If you didn't clock it as the thing that it is, it wouldn't distract you by any means. And so I think that's really cool. What I was kind of curious about, to bring it back to what we were talking about right before the break, is this technology that Peter created going to lead to the neck devices that prisoners on Genosha wear?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't explicitly spell it out, but I imagine anybody that's even a casual fan of the comics is going to pick up on that. It kind of reminds me of, you know, Tony with Ultron, this idea that, like, good intentions can often have unintended consequences. And in fact, he and Banner have a really good, real quick philosophical conversation about that when he meets him at the university.
Well, and this is one of the things that I love about this movie. Like, we've had this conversation offline, but I want to mention it real quick, and then we'll probably move on to some other topics. There's two ways to do this kind of thing, this kind of universe building that this movie does. There's the way in which it feels like you are a contractually obligated to have paid attention to everything that came before and to everything that comes after this. In the way that, like, I would call it like a crossover, to where to understand what happens in the next one, you have to have seen or read this one. And
right.
That's the part that everybody dreads about these kind of movies, that like, I didn't see the last 16. I'm not going to know what's going on. And then there's this is happening in the course of Spider-Man's regular series of films or comics or whatever medium you're talking about. And these characters just happen to show up. And you can get everything that's going on with them from the context of what you're given and what you're reading right now or watching right now. And there may be elements of this that carry forward into other things, but it does not affect your understanding or enjoyment of this. And that's what they did in this movie.
It was really fortunate in that way, because you're right. It didn't seem like it had to carry a lot of baggage from before, other than the implications of No Way Home are pretty huge. But if you're watching the Spider-Man movies, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
However, it does now mean that it probably requires that you had seen Brand New Day to understand what's happening in the beginning of the, and I'm not saying for sure, but you get what I mean. Like, it has the advantage of not having to look back, but it means the projects that come ahead of it are going to be burdened by having to have the prior knowledge of this, you know?
I don't necessarily think so. I think that all of it can be done the same way it was done in this movie. And yeah, you have a lot of stuff from the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe in this movie. You've got Hulk showing up. You've got Black Widow showing up. You've got Jean Grey showing up. You've got Punisher showing up. Everything you need to know about those characters, you got within the context of this movie. And they will go on to other stuff. And the context of the stuff from this movie, you can easily do in the same way. Not everything has to be a crossover. It can just be a guest appearance, which is what this was.
Yeah, I like that. I like that core premise. I do think that the way that they seeded all of these things in, similar to the visual nods to the comic book covers, like it doesn't, it's not as if it's making a statement where there's some like big connection to the title of the X-Men or something like that. But it's like, if you are, like I say, a casual comics book fan, I remember those neck devices on Genosha and the way that they're used to suppress mutant powers. And when Peter's working on this thing, I'm like, oh, wait a second. This is kind of like how Tony's technology was meant to protect people and then ultimately ends up causing conflict. And to me, even if it has been done before, it's one of the more interesting ways of approaching something like this. And the way that damage control is depicted in Brand New Day, there's not really any ambiguity about whether or not they're good from the first moment that he meets them. But I still think that it was interesting to take this organization that we've kind of seen in previous Spider-Man movies. They've been established since the beginning, and watching them evolve into this thing that's eventually going to probably be responsible for the subjugation of the entire mutant race, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, something interesting in this film, a couple of interesting things in this film. One, we don't ever actually hear the word mutant in this film.
No, but we do get mutation, but you're right.
Mutation, but it's never about Gene. It's about Peter.
No, you're right. You're right.
So there's that. And two, the device that Peter creates, it doesn't just work on mutants.
Is that?
It worked on him. It worked on Hulk.
So this is what I was understanding what they have as more classifying them as mutants, right? Where like Thor, it wouldn't be able to work on Thor because he doesn't have some genetic thing that causes him to metamorphosize, where somebody like Peter and Bruce are actually mutating into the thing, you know?
Well, I mean, we don't know that for sure, but Thor is basically an alien. So you're probably right.
I thought what they were doing with this movie was saying that Bruce and Peter were mutants, but
no, I don't think that at all.
In the X-Men.
No, in the comics, they would distinguish between a mutant and a mutate, and what they would be, like somebody that's born with these powers versus somebody that something happened to them along the way that created these powers.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. And yeah, never like explicitly said they are mutants or anything like that. I would be curious to see.
Yeah.
Well, so to follow your logic, I see how that would change the dynamic of the entire MCU, but we need a way to make mutants a group of people that can be oppressed or suppressed, and I feel like that's the natural way to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, let's be honest, it's not something that always necessarily makes sense in the comics either. But we've got to take a break. We're going to come back with more in a moment. We're going to talk about another movie this year that stars Tom Holland and Zendaya and John Barenthal. When we come back, you're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Times have changed and times are strange. Here I come, but I ain't the same. Mama, I'm coming home. Time's gone by, it seems to be. You could have been a better friend to me. Mama, I'm coming home. You took me in and you drove me out. Yeah, you had me hypnotized, yeah. Lost and found. Mama, I'm coming home. I could be right, I could be wrong. It hurts so bad, it's been so long. Mama, I'm coming home.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. And I said before the break, we're going to talk about another movie that came out this summer. The other two biggest movies of the summer have three of the same cast members. We've got Tom Holland, who's fair to say a lead role in both movies. Then we've got Zendaya, and we've got John Barenthal. And, you know, would you have thought of that song when I mentioned the Odyssey, Jeremy? But
no, but I definitely see where you were coming
doesn't
from.
Doesn't it fit exactly, though?
Yeah, it does.
Pretty crazy. But, yeah, we're talking about, of course, the Odyssey, Christopher Nolan's adaptation of the ancient Greek poem, one of the first and most memorable heroic poems, I guess I should say, epic poems. Very interesting take on this film. Of course, it's Christopher Nolan. It was never going to suck. This was never going to be bad. I mean, come on. The heavyweight talent that's lined up in this film, not just the three we mentioned, and Tom Holland and John Barenthal again get to play against each other in this film just so brilliantly. They're so good together. But then you've got Matt Damon, and you've got Anne Hathaway. You've got Robert Pattinson. So, you know, you got half the Justice League and the Avengers in this movie. What can you say about this movie, man?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a Christopher Nolan apologist. And when I say that, I'm saying I'm not going to defend every single choice that he makes. I'm not going to overlook the very fair critiques of some of his work. And I believe full-throatedly that he's a filmmaker that's more invested in engaging the audience intellectually than he is emotionally. And I do think that that's a shortcoming that is pretty fair across the board. I think there are some things in The Odyssey that tend to elevate it from an emotional standpoint. And I think that's great. It kind of shows growth as a filmmaker. I think it harkens back to the greatest epics of cinematic history. He honors the traditions of a lot of in-camera work. You know, the Cyclops was a meld of all sorts of technologies, but they had a 60-foot marionette puppet on stage to give it tangibility for the actors to work against. Instead of, you know, making CGI giants, they found people over 7 foot to play the giants, and then they had little people. So that means there was like a 4'6" woman stunt performer performing as Odysseus against some 7 foot giants, and some of the fight choreography, which is amazing. Like, a lot of the things that Nolan asked of the studios are things that would not be granted to, you know, 99.9% of filmmakers out there, because he didn't take the easy route in any of this. But I really think it paid off, not just critically, but commercially as well.
Yeah. I mean, you can't argue with the results, over $1 billion worldwide so far. And I don't think you can argue with the results on the screen either. I mean, like, this is, again, easily one of the five best movies of the year. So it's not just like a commercial success. It is a critical success. This is a film we're going to see a lot of Oscar nominations for. I don't know if we're going to see him for Spider-Man Brand New Day. Certainly maybe in the technical categories, but like, the chances of them getting any acting nominations are probably pretty slim. But we could see some of the people that acted in both movies certainly get an Oscar nomination for this one.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. You named the three big winners in this equation, no matter how you slice it. I mean, everybody involved in these projects, obviously kudos, but it's got to be wild to have the two movies that essentially propped up the entire summer box office come out within a couple weeks of each other. Like, they're definitely riding on a high right now.
Not to put John Barenthal aside either, but like, at the center of both of these films is a possibly married couple, because they're still kind of playing coy about whether they've actually gotten married or not. But certainly a romantic couple, without any doubt. There's no doubt that they are in a committed relationship, Tom Holland and Zendaya. And one of the things I thought was really fun about that aspect of it was, apparently, prior to working with him, both Tom Holland and Zendaya considered Christopher Nolan to be their favorite director.
And oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
When he got cast, they were both very excited for him. And then in meeting with Nolan, with Tom Holland meeting with Nolan on this film, he tells him, "Oh yeah, by the way, can you ask your wife if she'd be interested in being in this too?" And so he got to call her and tell her, "Hey, guess what? You get to do this too."
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know that Telemachus, played by Tom Holland, and Odysseus, played by Matt Damon, obviously top billed characters. They're kind of both protagonists of this film in an interesting way. But I think Zendaya's character may actually be the most thematically potent character in the film. And I won't get into why, but what I think is so clever about Christopher Nolan and why I would say it's a subversion of the heroic poem is because Odysseus was always framed as this mastermind. His cunning was seen as a virtue. But what Christopher Nolan has done has been this deconstruction of what the cost of that trick actually was. Zendaya's character is interesting because she's framed in such a way that I thought that she was one very specific Pantheon member, and then learning what the rest of the story is really recontextualized it. And it was at that moment that I was like, oh no, this isn't like a great movie. This is probably a modern masterpiece, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I just, across the board, like I was having a conversation recently about like, all right, who gets Oscar nods out of this? Like how many slots, as far as the acting goes, like how many slots do they get? Like, it seems to me like Matt Damon's a shoo-in for a lead actor nomination. I feel like Tom Holland deserves a nomination too. I feel like he'd be in supporting. There's the question of where you put Anne Hathaway's performance. Like, I think, again, it's a performance that's worthy of consideration. I don't know that I call it lead. Like, I don't know that it's not a supporting performance.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you're the top billed female woman actress on a movie, are you automatically best lead actress?
No, I mean, you get to choose where you submit yourself. Like,
okay,
she could choose either one.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then you get into, like, there's so many other great performances. Like, I mean, John Leguizamo.
Awesome.
Oh, so, so good in this movie. And like, I really want that. Like, that is my choice for supporting actor right now, with like above anything else. But then you got to look at how good Robert Pattinson is in this movie, and very much a supporting role, but a key supporting role. You got to look at how good Barenthal is in this movie. And then, you know,
Barenthal felt like he walked in from a different movie and punched the guy who was supposed to be playing the role in the face and just threw on his breastplate, and nobody was brave enough to tell him to leave. That's how I thought about Barenthal in this movie. I was like, okay.
But it works. He owns that role.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's one of my favorite actors. If there was one character that kind of stuck out to me, I was like, all right, okay, I dig it. But interesting.
I just worry, like, I wonder what's going to get lost in the shuffle there. Like, because somebody, there's going to be somebody that doesn't get, you know, there's so many others that I can name, even just in small roles. Elliot Page is very great in a small role.
Lupita Nyong'o. With Odysseus.
I'm sorry?
The Indian actor that plays as Odysseus, like first mate or captain or whatever.
Oh, yeah. You had asked me that, and his name's just gone right out of my head.
He's very good anyways. Yeah.
And just all, you know, all the sirens, you know, and Circe, and, you know.
Yeah.
There's no wrong note here. Like, right now, it's hard for me to argue against this winning Best Picture.
Yeah.
Remains to be seen what else is going to be released throughout the year. And I say this with saying, you know, maybe it's not necessarily my personal favorite movie of the year, but it's so hard to argue against it.
Yeah. I think, if I were going to compare it to the last film that we talked about, I'm going to use the word challenging. I'm actually shocked by how many people do seem to like it, but I've also heard a bit of pushback against it. I just don't think it's like feel-good escapism. In fact, it's kind of a guilt trip about what it means to look at the hero as something heroic instead of something that should be like actually pathologized, you know?
Well, so, and that's why it rises to the level it does, without a doubt.
Yeah.
We got to go, but we will be back again next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.